All right, let's go ahead and get started. I'll hit my recording here. All right. So remember, we're talking about the marriage relationship because it's going to permeate pretty much all of the counseling that you do. And you go, why are you going to talk about the role of the husband first rather than the role of the wife? Because when you read Ephesians 5, you recognize that the wife is actually mentioned before the husband. And the reason that I'm dealing with the role of the husband first is because it's so rare to get a people that you're counseling where the husband is doing the right things and the wife's not interested. Okay, very, very rare. It's not that it doesn't happen. I would say in the first probably 5 or 6 years I was counseling, I would tell people, I would say, I've never had it happen where a husband is seeking after the things of God, doing the right things, and the wife's not interested. But I think I could still count on one hand where that happens, but I think it's becoming more common now where men are trying to do what's right and the wife is not interested in reconciling the marriage. But it's really a confusing thing to be a husband and a man in our culture because our culture has such a skewed view of men, right? Men, if you just watch TV, like men are portrayed as buffoons in commercials and television shows. I mean, there's no heroes there. You don't want to be like somebody. And the people that they kind of put out as heroes are just killing people and sleeping around. And so with this growing number of single moms and absent fathers and worldly parenting, we have this growing refusal of young men to grow up and take responsibility. And we're seeing that more and more. And so our world has really redefined manhood. It's redefined leadership. It's redefined responsibility. And I would say that I meet often with grown men who don't act like men. They aren't firm in their faith. They're not strong. They're just children. And I hate to even say it like that, but they're kids. And so when you see this biblical model for manhood, just understand this is really radical, right? We always joke about it. Like our church is so weird. The biblical manhood is so weird. But know that it's also so impossible that if God doesn't show up and in this man's life, then this guy is going to live under a weight of guilt that he's not going to have victory over. And typically, when men feel guilty about something, and Promise Keepers was a great example of that. I like Promise Keepers, I'm not dogging Promise Keepers, but what ended up happening with Promise Keepers is you had these men who were really excited to go back and lead their homes because they're under a wave of guilt of how they should have. And so they come back and they do fantastic for 2 weeks. But because the heart hadn't changed, 2 weeks is all you get. And so just know, like, you need to get some traction and some momentum, and don't try to change everything tomorrow, right? You're building towards this. And so, you know, I like what Vodi Bakum said. He says, we may not do this perfectly, but our prayer should be better today than yesterday, better tomorrow than today. That's just a good way to look at it. Better today than yesterday, better tomorrow than today. Moving more in this angle than in this angle, right? And so we got three words to describe the husband's role. And the first word is that of a learner. Okay, he is a learner. That comes from 1 Peter 3, 7. And I'm going to read. I'm going to run over to it real quick. I think I have it on here. Yep, I do. He says, you husbands, in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way. Okay, that's a critical word there, understanding. Live with your wives in an understanding way as with someone weaker, since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life. And then he says, so that your prayers will not be hindered. Okay, this is our foundational verse. Husbands, live with your wives in the same way. Live with your wives in an understanding way as with someone weaker, since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life so that your prayers will not be hindered. And so the first thing we see is he's a learner. And so this is a command. Okay, we are commanded to learn our wives. That word understanding, we'll talk about it here in just a few minutes, but that word live with your wives in an understanding way, it's live with your wives with knowledge. In our seminar, I always say, like, man, you are now enrolled in college, and your first class is Wife 101, right? And then it's going to be Wife 102, and then Wife 201, and Wife 202, and it just keeps going on and on and on. But it's a command. Now, the world will tell you that you can't understand a woman. In fact, one of the funny things, and, you know, I tell people that, you know, I say I don't counsel women. I don't. It's rarely rare that I'll counsel a woman. And when I do, I always have a woman with me. But I say I have 7 daughters and 1 wife. And if there's one thing I understand about women is that I don't understand women. Okay? But I'm supposed to understand my wife. I'm supposed to live with my wife in an understanding way, live with knowledge. And so I would say, discipline yourself to strive to understand your wife. Okay, this is a command. You are commanded to know your wife. Number two, it's a command that takes time. And listen, man, I talked to some guys that are so knowledgeable. Has anybody ever asked EJ what TV you should buy?
You don't even have to ask. Just mention.
Oh, my goodness. He will tell you everything about TVs that you never wanted to know. Right? And he'll have every detail, and he'll tell you what to buy and where. Listen, we know sports teams that way. We know stock market that way. We know interest rates that way. Why? Because we study it. And the call, though, for husbands is know your wife like that. Discipline yourself to know your wife. And just know it takes time. Okay? It's also a command that takes study. So study some godly women in the Bible. There's a sheet there in your handout. Oh, I forgot to go through those. We'll go through them later. In your handouts, where 50 questions to ask your wife. Okay. We're students of so many things, whether they're sports teams or new tools or the stock market or our business. We need to study our wives. Okay, the next is it's a command to treat her as fragile. We say she's a weaker vessel. Now, listen, weaker does not mean less than. Generally speaking, though, and so in a general sense, if we lined up all the men on this side and lined up all the women on this side and said, okay, fight to the finish, pretty certain men win. Right? So fragile doesn't mean less than. It means valuable. Right? Think about her as valuable. You know, we're eating on these little paper plates today. Imagine bringing your fine china in. You know, there's a certain sense of care you have with your fine china. You know, there's a vase you have or a yadro you have or something that, you know, don't touch that. Why? It's valuable. Well, that's how you see your wife. Valuable. Fragile. More as a piece of fine china than a paper plate. Right? Even though the paper plate's very weak. Right? That's how some people see their wives. In that way. I don't mean it like that. Learning affects your spiritual life. Remember what he said? So that your prayers won't be hindered. So that your prayers won't be hindered. You realize that if you're not, and say you, I'm talking about men here, but if a husband is not in right relationship with his wife, his prayers are hindered. So it really severely affects your spiritual life. Psalm 66:18. I don't think you have this in your notes. Psalm 66:18 says, if I regard wickedness in my heart, the Lord will not hear. Philippians 2, verses 3 and 4. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourself. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. So when we're not in fellowship with our wives, our prayers are hindered. When I mistreat my wife, my relationship with God is severely affected. Roman numeral number 2. So we're learners, we're also lovers. It's a command, not an option. Right? Because you can't command a feeling. It's not an option because you can't command a feeling. Right? And so what is love? And just know that when we start to define love, American culture doesn't help. American culture sees love as a weakness. And so typically what men will do when they leave their homes, they typically default to one of two extremes, okay? On one side, they'll be the arrogant dictator. That's the idea of, so one side you get the arrogant dictator, the other side you get the passive pleaser. So the arrogant dictator is, it's my way or the highway. I'm the leader in this home, right? What I say, you do. That's not biblical headship. And I meet with so many men who just kind of demand this leadership. And I think, I don't know, and maybe Sherry could tell you, but I don't know of a time where I've like told Sherry, you know what? God's called me as the leader. I know we disagree, but this is what we're doing. I don't know. Maybe there is times, but that's not us, you know? But the philosophy of the arrogant dictator is whatever I want, I get. And I love Chris Moles on this. And if you're dealing with any kind of abuse stuff, I really highly recommend you read Chris Moles' book, The Heart of Domestic Abuse, I think it's called. We've got it in the office. But he says this, men want respect, but they'll settle for fear. Right? Men want respect. Men demand respect, but he'll settle for fear. He would rather his wife be afraid of him if she's not going to respect him. Because there's a sense where it's like, well, I'm dominant, I'm leading in that. And then on the other side of the equation, so you get the arrogant dictator on one side. On the other side of the equation, you get the passive pleaser. You can call me wrong if you want to. I think the Christian church encourages men to be passive pleasers. I think they're saying that, you know, to love your wife unconditionally means that you give her everything she wants. Or they pull the, well, Jesus was a servant leader, so you needed to wash your wife's feet. Whatever service you know your wife would want, you ought to do that for her. And listen, that's not loving your wife. It's loving yourself. And the reason I say it's loving yourself is because you don't want to put up with the consequences of not giving your wife what she wants. That's not loving her. That's loving you. So the arrogant dictator says it's my way or the highway, and the passive pleaser says, yes, dear, whatever you want. Both extremes are wrong. Okay? Both are wrong. You do. You need a lot of wisdom in this case. And courage. Yeah, and courage. For Sherry and I, and listen, I was good in convincing her that I was a believer. Okay, she told me, she said, I won't date anybody who's not a Christian. Well, I had went to a FCA meeting when I was in high school. And they said, you know, is there anybody in here that wants to share the gospel? Anybody want to become a Christian? I'm like, yeah. I mean, I raised my hand in front of all of my peers. I was the only one. And prayed, you know, that prayer out loud, right? And afterwards, he came to me and he said, hey, man, that's great. He said, write in your Bibles. He gave me a Bible. Write in your Bible. It was the Living Bible, by the way. He said, write in here the date. It was, I still remember, January 10th, 1985. He said, write the date in there that you became a Christian. And then he said, I'd love to have you come visit our church this Sunday. He said, I can pick you up, or you can get, but I'll meet you out there. And I went, oh, no, I just don't want to go to hell. I'm not planning on changing. I just don't want to go to hell. Right? He gave me this really weird look. Now, I thought he was just mad because I wasn't going to go to his church. Okay, the reality was he recognized he didn't get it. He didn't get it. So Sherry says, I'm not going to date somebody who's not a Christian, which, by the way, means I was not acting like somebody who was a Christian, right? But I said, oh, no, I'm a Christian. Open my Bible, which most of us didn't bring Bibles to boot camp and A school. I did. Open my Bible. Look at there. January 10th, 1985, I prayed that prayer. And you think I went to church with her? Better believe it. Right? I did. I went to church with her. And if she wanted to go, why? Not because I wanted God, I wanted her. And so she'll tell you, she's funny, she'll say, within a week after we were married, she realized, oh, this boy ain't saved. She did. He is not saved. So for 6 years, true story, 6 years, she would read those, you know those Our Daily Breads? Out loud at night in bed. And she'd say, what did I say? And I said, something about Jesus or something. She's like, no, I didn't. Listen again. And she'd read the whole thing over again. She did that for 6 years. You know? So, listen, we weren't set up for success, right? We were not set up for success. I don't know how I got on that, but that wasn't in my notes. So, but both extremes are wrong, right? And so what is then the biblical view of love? It's John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. Whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. Right? It's Romans 5. God demonstrates, or God proves his love for us, and that while we were sinners, Christ died for us. It's agape. It's unconditional love that Jesus has for us. Number three, biblical love is a test of true masculinity. Husbands, love your wife like Christ loved the church. And listen, I was going to go a long way into this. I'm just not. Our world keeps yelling about toxic masculinity. And listen, there is some toxic masculinity. I wish they wouldn't call it that, because it takes true masculinity out of the equation. But it seems like everything's toxic nowadays, isn't it? But it's so broad. And so really, when they're talking about toxic masculinity, they're talking about abuse, right? We don't want that. But we have to be very careful. And so what we do when we, you know, it's almost like tomorrow I've got to teach on Noah's Ark and the covenant of the rainbow, right? You know what would be great to do is to come in wearing a rainbow jacket or a rainbow tie. Listen, that's our rainbow, yeah. Right? But they've taken that. So now there's a little bit of fear, right? Like, nobody's going to put that on your Facebook, right? Because there's a fear about that. And so the same has happened with masculinity, because toxic masculinity is put out there as being this dangerous, and it is dangerous, but the term masculinity has been taken away from us. Okay? That's our term. And so we have to be really careful then on getting our definitions from society on what it means to be masculine. Yeah. And as a whole, listen, men commit acts of emotional, spiritual, verbal, physical abuse at a far higher rate than women do. That's toxic masculinity. I'm good with that. If that's how you're going to define it, like, I'm good with that. But men see themselves as protectors. That's good. We should see ourselves as protector. And I remember, you know, we have 7 daughters, 1 son, okay? 1 son, we trained him. It is never okay to hit your sister, to harm your sister, to hurt your sister in any way. His most severe consequences was when he would do that, because you are to protect your sister, right? Protect your mother. It's never okay for you to be violent against your mother. Like, never. There's not any situation where that would be okay. Well, one day, the next door neighbor, the lady, comes over and she said, "Adam punched Zach in the face." I'm thinking, "Ah, oh, what'd that boy do?" You know, and so we called Adam in, what happened? And Julia was crying. I think it was Julia, wasn't it? Julia was crying, and Adam was crying, and I was like, "What happened?" You know, Leah just came over, said, "You punched Zach in the face. Did you punch him in the face?" He said, "Yeah." "Well, what'd you do that for?" He said, "Dad, he kept throwing pine cones at Julia, hit her in the face with it." He said, "So I punched him in the face." And I said, "Good for you." He was like, "Really?" And I'm like, "Yeah, like, don't go punching people in the face, but that's what you're supposed to do." Now, some people will take that and say, you're teaching them violence. No, I'm teaching them to protect. Like, that's not toxic. There are times to act aggressively to protect your family or your community. You know what the opposite of it was? And I'm sure it was copyright, so I can't put it on here, but it's George Costanza, remember? When he's running over kids and old ladies to escape a fire. Remember that? They're at that party, and he's like, "Fire!" And he just knocks over this lady. She's in a, you know, on a walker, knocks her over, knocks over all the kids over, and he runs out the door. I like what Paul says, 1 Corinthians 16:13. He says, "Be strong, act like men." Okay? Be strong, act like men. And so what degrees, then, of love are we to show? And I love these words. Listen, it's first. First. Like, you love her, like, you love Christ first, but your wife's first. Other than Christ, your wife is first, right? Ultimately, now listen, this is so important. The husband is to not just love his wife, he's to lead his family in love. The husband should be the number one lover in the home. Okay? That's his role. So not just love your wife like Christ loved the church, lead the family in love. So it's first. In other words, you initiate loving things. Unfortunately, who usually does that? The mom does. Yep. So first and most is the next one. Remember, men want respect, but they'll settle for fear. Men don't like to use physical force. And they don't want to because the consequences for physical force are too great. But Chris Moll says, but they'll do it if they feel like they don't have another choice. In other words, if I can't get the disrespect to stop. And men want submission, but they will gladly settle for subjugation. They'll belittle their wives. "You're just like your mother." Or, "How stupid you are." I've had women who tell me they wish their husband would hit them because then they wouldn't think they're crazy. Yeah. And so first, most, and sacrificially. Sacrificially. We've talked about that already. Here's a good summary. Loving sacrificially, like Christ loves the church, means I die for my wife. Sacrificial love means it costs something. If it doesn't cost anything, it's not sacrificial. Number four, unmistakably, and I like this. People shouldn't question how much you love your wife. We love making Ashton cringe by kissing. I know, this is like the most embarrassing thing I could possibly do. Right? She's like, "There's children in the room." And like, she just gave me a kiss goodbye. What's the big deal, you know? but it should be unmistakable. What would your friends say that you say about your wife? Or you, what you think about your wife? Like, I must never speak negatively about my wife to others. Right? That Jesus presents his bride as pure and spotless and holy and lovely. Like, that's how Jesus presents his bride, us, and we're not. Right? He presents us as pure and spotless and holy and blameless, and we're not. How do husbands present their wives? How should we present our wives? Pure and holy and lovely and spotless, blameless, even though they're not. So listen, when you're counseling, listen to how he talks about her. I told my friends. My friend said, oh, that means you guys are talking about wives. Jesus loved the church so much that he makes her pure. So first, most sacrificially, unmistakably, and in spite of her faults. In other words, the same way that Jesus loves you, in spite of you. Number six, without bitterness. We'll talk about bitterness more when we talk about communication. Number seven, as your own body. And again, we've talked about this already, but just think about how this relates in a marriage relationship. You know, the world says the biggest problem you have is you don't love yourself enough. And we say the biggest problem you have is that you love yourself way too much. And proof that you love yourself is when you're cold, you warm yourself. When you're hungry, you feed yourself. When you're in danger, you protect yourself, right? Are you doing that for your wife? Love her as yourself. So we've seen so far that the husband is first a learner, right? The next one is that he's a lover, and then Matthew 20 is that he is a leader. He's a leader. And so let's talk about first what leadership is not. What leadership is not. Let's go to Matthew 20 real quick. And so again, we're kind of overlapping some stuff on here, but what leadership is not first is a dictator. You're not a dictator. In Matthew 20, and it's a long passage, but I just want to read 1 to 16 here and talk about the parable of the laborers. It says, "For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. When he had agreed that with the laborers for a denarius for the day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went out about the third hour and saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And to those he said, 'You also go into the vineyard, and whatever is right I will give you.' And so they went. Again he went out about the sixth and ninth hour, and he did the same thing. And about the 11th hour he went out and found others standing around. And he said to them, 'Why have you been standing here all day long?' They said, 'Because no one hired us.' And he said to them, 'You go into the vineyard too.' When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, 'Call the laborers, pay them their wages, beginning with the last group to the first.' And when these hired about the 11th hour, it came, each one received a denarius." By the way, denarius is just a day's wages, okay? "When those hired first came, they thought that they would receive more, but each of them also received a denarius. And when they received it, they grumbled at the landowner, saying, 'These last men have worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden and the scorching heat of the day.' But he answered and said to one of them, 'Friend, I'm doing you no wrong, but did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what is yours and go. But I wish to give to this last man the same as to you. Is it not lawful for me to do what I wish with what is my own? Or is your eye envious because I am generous? So the last shall be first and the first last.'" And so, listen, this is not a dictatorship here. How does he announce it? Man, he's generous. How generous is, but we would look at that and say, man, this, he's so unfair. It's not right. And there are times when our leadership, like we need to have the courage that this guy has to be able to make decisions that don't seem fair at all. Right? And the reality is the example here is that God is right. He does what's right, and he does what he wants, and he does what's good for us. The husband should do the same thing. There's two here in the next one, the two examples of unselfish service. Verse 17, he says, as Jesus was about to go up to Jerusalem, he took the 12 disciples aside by themselves. And on the way, he said to them, behold, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered to the chief priests and scribes, and they will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles to mock and scourge and crucify him. And on the third day, he'll be raised up. First of all, can you imagine hearing these words from Jesus? What do you mean you're going to die? What do you mean you're going to be delivered to the chief priest? But wow, what an example this is of unselfish service. The chief priests are the selfish ones. The chief priests are the ones that are going to crucify him. Look at the next one, verse 20. He said to her, what do you wish? She said to him, command that in your kingdom these two sons of mine may sit, one on your right and one on your left. Can you imagine? The mother of the sons of Zebedee, right? Jesus answered, you do not know what you're asking. Are you able to drink of the cup that I'm about to drink? And they said to him, we are able. Yeah, no problem. He said to them, my cup you shall drink, but to sit on my right and my left, this is not mine to give. It is for those to whom the Father, for whom it has been prepared by the Father. And hearing this, the 10 became indignant with the two brothers. Mrs. Zebedee wanted her sons to be famous. In some ways, you could say that I'll give you my sons in order to get. Right? That's so often what we see that's the passive pleaser, right? I'll give you this to get something out of it. And I like here, D, is what's this theme of servanthood applied to leadership? I don't think it's on your notes. It simply just says, the test of your servanthood. Is this on your notes?
Yes.
Oh, I love this quote. I don't remember where I heard it first, but the test of your servanthood is how you respond when you are treated like one. That's so good. The test of your servanthood is how you respond when you're treated like a servant. So it does not mean you're a dictator. It also does not mean that you do all the decision making. Think about this. Pilate should have listened to his wife. Adam should not have listened to his wife. To be the one who makes all the decisions puts you into that arrogant dictator mode. And so husbands and wives sort of work together as a team. Sometimes when I'm counseling, if there's a lot of stuff going on and you're not getting any traction anywhere, I always go to finances. Why would you go to finances? Finances are just numbers. It's black and white. They don't care about your emotions, right? You either have enough money or you don't have enough money. And so if you can start getting some traction, a few good weeks of budgeting and spending wisely and accomplishing goals, sometimes doing that can get you back into good marriage counseling, okay? So sometimes just working on a financial is good. And it allows them to work together as a team. And again, it takes the emotions out of it. Well, it should take the emotions out of it. But we've talked about it. Like, don't be that jerk. You know that I'm the leader. Me man, you woman. Me say, you do. It's so silly. So look at the pace setter. So you want to be a positive pace setter here. And God asks us to be shepherds, not cowboys. What's the difference? Shepherds are with the flock, right? Yeah, shepherds lead the flock. You know the flock. You smell like the flock. You know what they feel like. Like you're part of the flock. Cowboys, what do? They drive. Yeah. Yeah, be shepherds, not cowboys. Okay, teach the husband to set the pace for the family. We're teaching the husbands so that his family will pray like he prays. Read the Bible like he reads the Bible. Worship the way he worships. Like he's the example. He's the leader. And so you get a selfish leader and a servant leader. So the kids are fighting in front of the TV. Well, if he's a selfish leader, he's real cruel punishing them. But if he's a servant leader, he just teaches them. Okay? Decision to buy a new car. And again, these aren't my notes, but this would be kind of corny. Look at my new car. But listen, some guys, and I think women do, both men and women spend more money than we're supposed to, right? But men buy big ticket things, right? Moms are buying extra clothes or extra this or for the house typically, you know. But men are like, do you see my new car? You bought a new car with it? Well, you got the, you know, you just bought a new dress. Look at this boat. Oh, honey, I got a great deal on this boat. My sister, I used to love what she would say. She would say, look how much money, she'd come home from a shopping trip and she'd say, look how much money I saved you. But a servant leader would communicate those things. Wife says something inappropriate at church or in public or whatever. And there's the selfish leader will belittle. Boy, I hate when men belittle their wives. I typically call them out when they do. It's so embarrassing. Coach and encourage her to be Christ-like. Well, how do we do that? Well, number one, we focus on needs. Focus on needs. Don't be oblivious to the obvious. What are your family's needs? And you know how you find out what your family's needs are? Ask your wife. Number two, be goal-oriented. We have 5-year plans for work and stuff like that. We should set goals for our homes. I don't do a good job with that. I need to do a better job with that. Now, what's the saying? Failure to plan is planning to fail. Right? Failure to plan is planning to fail. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. It's almost like, to me, that is almost like sin. Right? Is that a preference or a sin? Right? Is that a want or a need? So a need means if you don't have it, you're going to die. Or somebody's going to die. Right? I mean, a genuine need. Right? So is it really a need or a want? Trying to differentiate between the two. Mm-hmm. Yeah, finances are easy because it's just money, just numbers. Number three, set example of self-control. And I know there are bad influences out there. Most of the time, though, our kids see, well, we see who we are as parents, how we act as parents, by what they do. I remember Maria one time, she was a teenager, helping at Vacation Bible School. And I was just walking by, and she was scolding this kid like a champ. I mean, she was just like going off on this little kid. I don't know what he did, but and just before I kind of jumped on her case, I went, ooh, that's what I do. She was mimicking me. And I'm like, okay. So we talked about it later, but yeah, I realized like they will do what you do before they do what you say. Okay? Children will do what you do before they do what you say. Number five, you're a teacher. Oh, sorry. Solve problems. Did we say that already?
Nope.
Solve problems. Be solution oriented. And this is good for men. Men typically should do this, right? Think this way. Solve problems. Number five, be a teacher. And can I say in the be a teacher thing, teach from your overflow. Does that make sense? Your overflow. Teach the overflow. In other words, if you're filling up a glass and you're pouring it out as quickly as you're filling it up, like you're going to be running on empty. But if you're filling up a glass and it's just flowing over, teach the overflow. Like pour into yourself more than you're pouring into them, as long as you're pouring in a lot. Okay. Doesn't have to be formal, by the way. Talk about the sermon on the way home. Talk about what you read in your quiet time. Just as you walk, by the way, and sit down and rise up, and as you just talk. And you don't have to try to if it's the overflow, right? Otherwise, you have to try to do it all. Be joyful to live with, live joyfully with. Is it fun being married to you? I don't know my answer. Is it joyful being married to you? There's a saying, it was a shirt, and I thought, man, this is really funny. It says, my job as a dad is to know stuff and be grumpy. So I remember, I sent it on our family thread, and I said, I'm dominating this. Number seven. And they, like, some of my kids think that really, like, no, you're not. Like, I was joking with them. Spiritual leadership, like a coach. What does a coach do? A coach encourages and teaches. A coach doesn't give you what you want. Gives you what you need. You guys remember Tom Landry? Tom Landry was the first Dallas Cowboys coach. Coached for a long, long time. I think he was the first. I like what he said about coaching grown men, football, NFL. He says, my job is to get grown men to do what they don't want to do in order to accomplish all that they've ever wanted to accomplish. I think that's the role as husbands and fathers, is to get our families to do, not necessarily what they want to do, but what they don't want to do in order to have all that they've ever wanted to have. Be all that they've ever wanted to be. Okay, it's a process to do that. All right. Let me, Joe, is there another form, another packet?
Yeah.
The other thing. Okay. So I wanted to go through, Ryan, you can hit the recording on this too, but I wanted to